anything really neat about that is that everybody grew together. Was there, with the snowball fights between West Granite and Lincoln Place groups, were they basically friendly type things, or was it just a good, or did it?
No, it was just a good snowball fight.
Snowball fight, good deal. That's neat.
Yeah, it was not meant to be friendly.
Okay.
I remember one of the things, I was in the fifth grade in Washington School. Now, Washington School went through the sixth grade. And I was, I think, in the fourth grade at the time, and I was in this geography class. And if I remember her name, it was Miss Tansberger. One day out of the blue, she says, how many kids here speak more than one language? And there was maybe a half a dozen of us at least that raised our hands. But then we were all kind of embarrassed and sheepish. You know, we didn't know why she asked the question, you know, or what initiated the question, and in many cases we were kind of reserved and maybe a little bit self-conscious, you know, at the time. Our parents were foreigners and didn't speak English, so we were a little bit on the reserved side. So maybe half a dozen of us raised our hands, and I remember there was at least I remember at least three, maybe four Armenian kids in this class. And then I remember a girl named Dolores Vasilov, I remember her real well. She's passed away now, but she spoke two languages besides English. Because her parents, one was like Macedonian and one was maybe Hungarian. So she spoke both, because she learned both from her parents and Miss Tansberger. And then there was others, but I just don't remember who they were, but I remember it was, you know, six or seven kids maybe. And Miss Tansberger just shook her head. She just couldn't hardly believe that here we are at this age, maybe fourth grade, so maybe it's about 10 years old, I guess.
Yes.
That we at that age spoke for our age level, spoke fluently for our age groups. And I remember one time when I was in Central School, which was the seventh and eighth grade, my friend who I grew up, his name was Zilad Habibian. And Zilad and I had to, we got up in front of this English class and we had to speak in Armenian, and I think at that class we might have been the only two that who spoke a different language or perhaps the same language, and we had to get up in the front and do a little skit of, you know, maybe greetings and how are you and what's going on and that type of thing, and because it was so different for them to hear it, you know, and again we were reserved and kind of embarrassed and, you know, maybe even a little bit of ashamed, because we didn't know exactly, you know, what was going on. I don't think, there wasn't anything bad, with it, but I guess just from our background, and we felt a little bit, you know, embarrassed and a little bit awkward about it, but we did it. But, I think we lost it all when we got to high school. When we got to high school level, I think we kind of lost that maybe embarrassment,
okay.
Reserved, feeling. But one of the unique things about Lincoln Place also is that there was at least for a lot of years that there was three different grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
Down there, and one of them was Armenian, And one might have been Bulgarian, and the other might have been Macedonian or something like that, or Hungarian. The two of them were from the Balkan countries. I remember that. And then your parents would send you to, you know, one or the other. Well, we would go to the Armenian grocery store. Mm-hmm. And my father and my mother would send me down there, and we'd go down there, and we'd order whatever my mother wanted in Armenian. And we spoke to the people who owned the place, who were Armenian, and we bought it. It was my father's market. And in those days, you know, you'd go to the counter, and you'd tell them what you want, you know. And then they would go and get all your order, and then bring everything back to the counter. And tell you to go home, you know. And in fact, they gave credit because, well, at one time, the Vartans, for a long time, carried a lot of people for their groceries because they had no money. Yeah, you know, and I know that they carried my folks. And then when they started to work, they did bill off weekly and then paid off some of what they owned from prior. Prior to the time that they made a earning. So the Bartons were very instrumental in carrying a lot of the Armenians who were down there. That was kind of a blessing in disguise. And there were others, you know, as well, who maybe had little shops, you know, down there. In fact, I remember this one Armenian man who had a tavern there, and he didn't know how to read and write, but he could sketch very nicely, and he would sketch your face, you know, and then so if you had a beer or whatever, you know, he'd put down 5 cents or 10 cents, and under your face, sketching your face when the time came, you had to pay up because he knew who it was.
That's marvelous.
Yeah, That was a great
little
store. I cannot remember that. Yeah.
Now, looking at the notes, so you mentioned graduating from college. What area did you study in, sir?
I was in those years they had a special area for servicemen, but my concentration was in the business.
Okay.
Accounting and actually marketing and management was my major, but I didn't graduate. You know, I had 3.5 years. I didn't graduate, and I went to University of Illinois at Champaign, and I left. I started in fall of 48, left in January of 52. And I was on the varsity wrestling team too while I was there. Yeah. And I was on the GI Bill of Rights. But I also worked. I had a job almost 35-40 hours a week. And in fact, my sister, I might have been a sophomore or a junior when my sister came. And my father gave her $40, and he says, this is all I can spare. So she came up to the University of Illinois. $40 in those days would cover your tuition, but that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then so I, from my earnings, I paid, and you know, I put her through school for a year, and she quit after that. So I paid her room and board and her expense money and things of that nature, spending money, etc. But it took a toll on me because I was out for sports and I worked almost 35-40 hours a week. So I had my academic woes, you know. But anyway, it was another interesting story.
Goodness. What jobs were you working at then, just out of curiosity?
When I was in the university?
Yes.
I worked in this dry cleaning plant.
Oh.
I got the experience at home.
Okay.
And in fact, when I went to the student employment office, and I told him I'm looking for a part-time job, I had a job the next day. And in those days, they were paying the students who worked around the campus, they were paying them 65, 70 cents an hour, or you work for your meals.
Okay.
But the going tax rate was 65, 70 cents. And I got the job paying $1.25 an hour. In fact, the government was paying me $75 a month as my monthly stipend for the GI Bill. And I was at the point where I was almost making too much money. And if I made any more money, I would have been cut off or reduced in my earnings from the Uncle Sam. Mm-hmm. So,
I'm trying to think to sum it up. You've given me a wonderful amount of information.
You know what was nice down there, John, was that the Hungarians. The Hungarians had a very large hall in Lincoln Place.
Okay.
And in fact, it's called the Magyar House, which means the Hungarian home. And the Hungarians, in their own native language, when you say Magyar, that means Hungarian. And if you see it on the maps or other old stuff, it looks like it's spelled Magyar, but it's Magyar. And the Magyars built their place somewhere around 1927. And so they had their own little ethnic place. But then all the other ethnic groups would rent it. The Armenians would rent it, and they would have dances there.
Oh.
They would do plays, that type of things, and social activities were there. But it was rather unique that the Magyars had this nice big building. Today it belongs to the Mexicans. The Mexicans now own that building, so it's called the Mexican Home or Hall. I think it's called the Mexican Hall now. But the Magyars put that thing together, and they were the first ethnic group in Lincoln Place to build their own center.
Yeah. I was able to go on a walking tour of Lincoln Place about a month ago, I guess, now. And the community center or clubhouse is still just going strong. Young folks in there, basketball court and available. I like the rules and such they have up there, where they keep it very well focused on behavior. Seems like that's maybe a holdover from past times. It says, hey, we're here to support, but we want to develop good citizens, good members of the community.
You could have been, I don't remember you getting banned. I do remember you couldn't use your shoes to play on the basketball court. So a lot of times we played barefooted or with socks, but in most cases we couldn't afford tennis shoes. And there are stories where Miss Fraker, who was the guiding light when we were very young in Lincoln Place, of her buying tennis shoes for some of the kids. I was not one of them, but we heard a lot of stories of her buying shoes. But the rest of us who didn't have tennis shoes, we couldn't get on the floor, unless we were barefooted or had took our street shoes off and played in our socks. And that was a very strict rule, In fact, I guess it got to some point where even the kids enforced it on each other, who might have tried to sneak in or something of that nature. But she was a very strong guiding light for us. And then even when we got to be teenagers, and then other people came in, other staff people came in, we had dancers down there. And as the people from, as we referred to them from across the tracks, as they got a little braver, and they came down, and we had nice dances down there, but we were They wouldn't let their kids come down there, especially their girls. You know, they couldn't go down to Lincoln Place. They didn't know what kind of people, they were down there.
It seems that that type of thought or prejudice or pre-thought exists everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
People don't.
We knew it existed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, at some point we used to tease them and say, you guys can't come across the tracks, you know, unless you got passports.
Uh-oh.
You know, and then when the war came on, they put this tank, because American Steel made tanks, and they put this tank there, right at the tracks. They said, well, that tank is there to keep you guys out of there. And so we used to tease them in that respect. But there was a very definite line, at the tracks. But little by years, as the years went by, we even got bus service, you know.
Yeah.
Later years, and then when Venice City, won the basketball team, basketball championship, and of course put Venice City on the map. But 7 of the 10 first team was from Lincoln Place, you know. So they had to come to Lincoln Place, you know, and there was a big parade. And I remember it because, you know, I was not in high school, but as a kid, I was still living there. I remember a big parade came down Pacific Avenue. Let's see, I think it was still Pacific Avenue then. Anyway, it came down and toured, you know, through Lincoln Place. I don't remember where it went, but it came down the main house from the tracks, and you know, made a big show. And so a lot of people found out where Lincoln
Place was. Kind of an opening to the community. They said,
yeah.
Hey, wait a minute, these are people.
Exactly.
Okay. How would you sum up the overall effect of growing up in a community like that? That seems like it was some challenges, but a neat place to live too.
Well, basically, there were no rich people down there. A couple of people who had, let's say, the grocery stores or whatever, they might have been, you know, self-supporting in the sense of speaking. And there was very few cars down there. You know, cars were just almost a no-no. In Lincoln Place, there was very few. And I remember the age group next above me, even as I got to be a teenager, they were working on, 1932 Fords that they bought, you know, for a few dollars, and they were rebuilding them and things of that nature just to get them, going. And that was, in the very late 30s, early 40s, that was a vehicle choice that they maybe bought for $25 or $50, you know, that they were able to scrape together. But I for one, enjoyed it immensely, because in my later years, as I was working, you know, and I was mostly in the sales field, as I would meet these different people with different, European ethnic names, in many cases, I was able to recognize what ethnic group they belonged to, and then maybe I was able to say a couple of words and say hello or how are you, you know, in their languages. And that would put me in good standings, you know, with them. And it made my selling job a little bit easier, because just the fact that I recognize that they're ethnic group, and they may have had, if not their parents, maybe their grandparents, you know, might have been the immigrants over, and it gave me a little bit closer relationship to them. And in fact, I think it helped me immensely in my sales career as the years went by, and in my older life as a working person. So I think it was great. And then, of course, I even in my working career, I would meet other Armenians, and we would speak the language, and that that certainly gave me the advantage over others. And even in when I was in the service, when I would meet other Armenians and even other ethnic groups, that would give us a closer relationship. When I was in the service, and I met people who knew Armenians. Okay, they may not have been of any particular ethnic group or strong relationship to any particular ethnic group, but they knew other Armenians. That brought us to a closer relationship. So, in the overall scope, the fact that I had a strong ethnic background and a multi-ethnic relationship in growing up was a definite asset, for me as I grew up and in my working career.
Well, I appreciate your time, Andrew.
That's all right. Yeah. But you know, Lincoln Place was very, very unique. The people from Lincoln Place remember Lincoln Place.
Yes.
You know, and there's no doubt. I was talking today, even today, to a guy, a Mexican boy, and who came from a family of 10, and he's 3 years younger than I am. And when he was 9 years old, he and all his brothers and sisters went to Alton, to the orphanage, because his mother had died. And he and his brothers and sisters spent several years there. But he remembers enough about Lincoln Place to talk about it. He remembers, because he was still 9 years old when he left. And he brings out these names. Today he brought the name of Timber, and I remember Timber. He was a Mexican kid, and Weechi, you know, another Mexican kid, and then another boy named Mick Camarino, you know, and I said, do you remember Camarino had a dog? And he says, yeah, he had a police dog. I said, what was that dog's name? And it was like a trivia game. He says, I don't remember. I says, that dog's name was Oso. Oso, I think, means king in Spanish. I'm not sure of that, but I think that's what it means. He says, yeah, he says, that's right. Anyway, but this guy moved out of Lincoln Place basically when he was 9 years old because he had to go to the orphanage. Yet he talks about Lincoln Place because when he became 16, they told him, you're too old now for this orphanage. Today is the first time he told me this part of the story. He went to the Alexian Hospital, and he worked there, and they gave him room and board, you know. And then when he became 18, he said, how long am I going to stay here? He said, oh, you can leave any time you want. He didn't even know he could leave. And he said, well, I want to go back to Panama City. So they took him back to Panama City, and he moved in with his sister.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but he didn't know he could leave. Yeah. And so he was telling me that story, and this guy's, his name is Pete Martinez. And anyway, he has a bunch of brothers and sisters who were all from Lincoln Place. But when he found out that I was from Lincoln Place, there was a whole different relationship immediately. You know, it was like finding a lost cousin. I mean, I found this out several months back, but I mean, I was seeing this guy, and we were talking. But once we found out that we were from Lincoln Place, it just brought us that much closer, and we started telling these stories about Lincoln Place. Because Lincoln Place, for us kids, we go back before the engineering depot was there.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to walk from Lincoln Place out to the channel, Mississippi Channel. We used to call it the Slough. We didn't know it, but it wasn't too far from the sewer exit. But we didn't know that. We were too dumb. And we used to go out there and swim, and we learned to swim out there and do a little hunting. I did, but some of the kids did the hunting and fishing, out there. In fact, I remember one time during the war, we went out there with Lou Bison, and we went in a canoe, and then canoe tipped over, and we lost all of our clothes. I mean, every stitch. I did. I lost every stitch of my clothes. But Lou had something, and he came back at the Lincoln Place. He got a pair of pants or something for me. Brought it out there, and I was able to wear them and come home. But it was during the war, so it must have been in the early years of the war. And I had lost my shoes in that episode. Mm-hmm. My mother had to take me up to Kansas City Hall to apply for special stamps to get shoes.
Yes.
And so anyway, I was able to get an extra pair of shoes. Oh God, it was a story by itself.
Quite a life.
Yeah, it was. I remember my best friend, his name was Naz Donjo, and somebody will be asking him, mm-hmm. him questions, and he used to come, we lived just three or four houses apart, and there was a real elder, when we were little kids, that couple was elderly already. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't like our folks, they were already elderly. And that guy's name was Mel Cohn, and his wife's name was Newbob, and they didn't have any children. But Newbob was had a bad limb, and he would pay my best friend Naz. He would give him a nickel or a dime, I can't remember, to pull his wagon up to the relief hall to get, you know, food.
Sure.
You know, because they were on relief.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and he says, "Yeah." He says, "Well, Mel Cohn used to give me a nickel or a dime. I think it was a nickel." And he said, "I'll pull my wagon. We'd go up to the relief and fill it up with the food items, whatever they were." And he'd pull the wagon. It wasn't worth a nickel, but you know, he says, "I got a nickel. I got a nickel." I'm sorry, because this poor old man, he couldn't do it by himself. He had no kids and he had no wagon either.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And on top of that, he had one bad leg. I can't remember which one it is, but this Milcom was a character himself. On our block on Chestnut Street, when we were little, there was four Armenian families on my side of the street, and I think there was either four or five on the other side of the street. And then after those four or five families, then there was a row of Mexican
mm-hmm.
Families across the street. And then one more Armenian family on the very last house. And then these were these Mexicans lived. Those were company-owned homes,
okay.
Factory-owned
mm-hmm.
homes. And I think General Steelcaster, the O'Connor plant, owned them. And they were just kind of catty-corner from ours,
mm-hmm.
across the street on ours, and then they were the next house. And because my mother spoke Spanish, but we didn't say Spanish in those days, you know, I mean, that Hispanic word and Spanish thing is more recent times, you know. In those days, they were Mexican people, and they spoke Mexican,
mm-hmm.
you know. So my mother spoke Mexican, and they were very good to my mother because she would help them out a little bit, and she spoke Mexican. And
yeah.
Once in a while, they would send over Mexican goodies,
right.
you know, to my mother, because she would help them out, or she would speak Mexican to them.
Sound like everybody just kind of looked out for one another.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, one of my famous quotes there, as we got older, was that in those days, we ate inside and went outside to the jam. Now, you know, we're eating outside and going inside to the jam, because there were a lot of houses that didn't have inside plumbing. They had water,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they didn't have inside toilets. And a lot of houses in the place were like that. So in those days, we ate inside, went outside to the jam, and as we got older, things got better. We reversed the
outside. Wow, goodness. Well, say, I appreciate your time and you're helping me out and educating me on the area.
There's some other questions.
I think you have covered about everything that I was wanting just by talking, you know, conversation, and I appreciate it.
Okay, John.
Thank you.